Off the ball. Rugby.
Crocodile or Hippo, who do you fancy yourself against more?
Quick YouTube poll. Would Quinny take a crocodile in hand-to-hand combat? Yes, 56%.
Oh, that's good.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
You are very welcome along. It is the Hurling Pod. We're after the second weekend of fixtures in the Munster Hurling Championship coming around, and teams in Leinster are coming around to three, and we're getting an impression of where the summer might pan out from here. Tipperary, they remain alive despite falling 4 points down late on against Waterford. They rallied in the end, particularly in injury time, to rescue a draw at Welsh Park. It was a Munster Championship thriller again, a game that was full of wides, plenty of debatable decisions, which we're going to get through on the podcast. Wexford, they're a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma. A week after the shock loss against Antrim, the Models got their Leinster campaign back on track, beating Galway in the Championship for the first time since 1996. Only a second ever loss for Galway in the round robin in Leinster. But we possibly saw some worrying signs for Henry Shefflin's side ahead of the rest of the Championship. And Laois now have a foot and a half in the Joe McDonagh Cup final after their 10-point win at Kerry on Saturday afternoon. The mailbag is full of comments coming in from the Instagram and from the Twitter over the last 24 hours or so on this bank holiday as we're recording the Hurling Pod. It is with thanks to Bord Gáis Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship, and hopefully we're going to have news very soon about our first live show of the summer. But more on that probably next week. Delighted to say Paul Murphy's here. How are you, Paul?
I was going well.
Secret location for Paul this week, away from home. We don't see his stunning kitchen lights behind him, so he's away from home. And we've got James Skell as well. How are you, Skell?
Not great, but I'm here. I'm attending. Brave face on. Let's keep the show on the road.
I mean, you wear your heart in your sleeve. Let there be no doubt about that. And also, when I dip into the comments from the very start, we're not going to go towards, at least deliberately on the main pod, towards farming or NFL, because at Dublin's Fair City on YouTube, bucking the trend of the positive comments about farming over the last 2 weeks, he says, quote, "Lads, could you drop this American sport rubbish and also any farming stuff? As soon as I hear either, I think about turning off." That means you thought about it, but you didn't. He says, "It's, quote, a hurling pod. The clue is in the name." So,
Well, Dublin Fair City, you can go suck on a lemon. Because right? if you're a fan of this podcast, you know that we dive into multiple topics. Mm. As in, last year was Father Ted was dominated a good bit of it. There was a draft, which got great traction, actually, mind you. So, yeah, enjoy that lemon.
Yeah, I'm not going to insult any of the commenters because that's not my role here. But look, I took pelters during the week as well, Skell. I innocently pointed out that, you know what, there's a point there that's gone over the short enough posts at Welsh Park. To me, it looks like it's actually gone over the bar. We only kind of got a very quick replay, but I'd love to see another angle because I think that may well have been inside. Tipperary supporters rallied and went, "Geez, he's right. Look, that did look like it was over the bar. This could be crucial come the end of the game." And then I can't remember the exact quote that was underneath, but it was basically, "Go F yourself. You're against Waterford." And they're going,
Will you ever piss off with your anti-Waterford? One chip player complained, full of shit. Talk about 0 to 100. I mean,
I'm glad you kept it rather than me, because I have a good few of the comments that have come in set up for the conversation. But I remember seeing that going, "Lads, what's happened with civil discourse here, you know?"
Yeah.
Oh, God. Because there was another Waterford fan who said that they were behind the goal and they actually thought that it went just to the right. And we had a little bit of a back and forth and that was grand. And we both moved on and said it was a very enjoyable game. But that guy just went for it. Two-footed, he went in. So, look, there's lots to talk about. There's people who are saying you're not going to be hard enough on Galway. So let's see where we go with that. The two games of the weekend, if you missed them, they were both on GA Go on Saturday. Waterford and Tipperary finishing up a draw. Waterford 3-21, Tipperary 1-27. Kind of a bonkers game. We'll talk about Stephen Bennett's first goal particularly and James Owens walking across the line of the goalkeeper before the strike was hit. And he was actually definitely in Barry Hogan's eye line when Stephen Bennett's getting ready to jab the ball up into the air. He finished up with 2-3. Desi Hutchinson with 6 points. Very clever assist for the second Bennett goal as well, where it looked like he was going to go for a point and he flicked it across to his teammate. Tipperary, late rally, Shawnee Keneally getting a goal, which possibly was a square ball, or certainly looked questionable about it being a square ball. And then, again, the frees were kind of spread around a little bit. Gerard O'Connor hit three after he went on them after Jason Ford went off. Ford had hit two frees. Mark Keogh, maybe the star, with 4 points during the game. Possibly should have had a penalty. So, like, there's just so many talking points from this first game. And probably Bonner Maher should have been sent off. There was definitely a free that wasn't given to Barrett. That's become a big talking point over the last 24 hours. There's lots for us to try and unpack here, Murph. You sat down afterwards, you were away, so you sat down and watched it blind. I don't know if you knew the result at the point that you sat down to watch it last night. Skell and I are watching it live.
Yeah. Well, I did know the result because you were talking about it in the WhatsApp. So
I apologize for that. Go on.
No, that's fine. I'm okay. For anyone who didn't know, Skell got a little bit annoyed last week because I can't remember what match it was, Will, but we were just talking about it and sure, we weren't protecting Skell's ears from the result.
Yeah, but so, this was after the fact. I asked you to don't give any spoilers.
Fair point.
Okay. Yeah, I think it was Cork and Clare. And I'm pretty sure it was just something like, wow, that was a ridiculous finish for the goal. It might have been Horgan's goal where he flicked it over.
Yeah, exactly.
Not really giving anything away whatsoever. And Skell was like, no spoilers.
Yeah. But I wasn't precious like that. So fine.
Precious.
But I tell you, it's actually not a bad way to watch back a game because he had kind of hit a few highlights. So I was kind of like keeping an eye out for these things. But the funny thing was, like you said, Will, for a high tackle, I texted into the WhatsApp group and I said, when did the high tackle happen that you were talking about? Because I saw Barrett's one and I thought that was the one. You said, no, when Bonner Maher comes on. So there was a lot of decisions. Again, as you were saying, was it Marquio penalty maybe in the first half there? I mean, the penalty for Stephen Bennett was crazy. You know, what happened with James Owens? But there was a lot of decisions. And to be fair, you know, if you look at Wexford and Galway, I know we'll get to that in a while. Between both games, there was actually a fair bit of needle in him, which was good. Okay, like, I mean, in terms of both teams in both games were going at it, ebbed and flowed at different times. End of the first half for Watford and Tip, the wides kind of took the sting out of it a small bit. Like, it started off helter-skelter, but then the wides for both sides there really started to take a bit of momentum out of it. And it was kind of there in the jaws for either team. If they got a few scores there before halftime, you know, come out in the second half, maybe pip on another one or two, either team there, but Watford or Tip, could have really went into the ascendancy there. But look, both games ebbed and flowed. But for Watford and Tip, I mean, there was a lot to pull apart out of it. The crowd really got behind it. It actually seemed like there was a great atmosphere down below in Welsh Park as well. And in fairness to Welsh Park, what I'm right in saying is about 12,000, 13,000 is the capacity there at the moment.
Yeah, it was just under 12,000 in the end. So I think there were some concerns about tickets not being taken up early in the week. And they were still on sale late into the week. But I think I saw most reports it was 11.6, 11.7. It was nearly 12,000 there anyway.
It's great to see that 11,000 and the atmosphere there, because 11,000 could nearly be lost in another stadium. But the atmosphere, in fairness to the crowd, was excellent. But there was lots of really good points as well. That, I mean, one thing I was looking at there, like Desi Hutchinson back in the corner, is just a different, it's a different player altogether. Like, his game is not out around the 45, the 65, as we saw during the league. But so many times I just saw him coming from the full forward position, breaking outside, ball into the hand, either taking on the man or recycling it. As we see for Jack Pendergast's goal, then gets the head up, strikes it across, goal. And there were so many points there where it's just going, like Darragh Lyons at midfield, obviously got man of the match after game, outstanding. I thought Kieran Bennett at cornerback was excellent as well. And Tipperary also, gee, look, they had a good few players stood up as well. So there was a lot for both teams that I'd say, yeah, you take forward. It was definitely an improvement for Tipperary. But there's also, I think, both teams will come away from this game, particularly with the wides. Watford, 71 minutes up, 4 points up. You're there going, right, well, this is game management now to see out the clock. It's not necessarily even a case of trading scores with Tipperary. It's just a case of straight away you're thinking, shut down the goal. If you need to, a little bit of a cynical foul, we'll do it. But make sure it's points they're scoring rather than goals. But look, a draw, this Munster Championship, like, the results are just keep ebbing and flowing in this, and you're trying to sit and go, well, what way do Watford come away from Welsh Park? Watford, I think, will be a bit disappointed. Tip, I think they'll be happy enough. 71 minutes, 4 points down, coming out of a draw, you know, kind of steadying the ship a small bit. They'll be happy enough with that. But even speaking to a lot of Tipperary supporters after the game, and even seeing the comments online, I think Tipperary are just kind of have a question mark at the moment as where are they going at the moment? Like, what is the look of the team? They maybe look a small bit tired, but bringing in, you know, you see Noel McGrath in there yesterday, and automatically it seemed like he was bringing a small bit more in terms of playmaking to that Tipperary attack and just getting on a few balls. But look, there's certainly improvement from the Limerick game. But it's interesting to see now where both teams go from this game. Like, you know, finishing on a draw can kind of, it's kind of a melancholy kind of a feel. You're coming away from it going, is that a good thing or is it a bad thing? But I think for Watford, certainly, they'll be a little bit disappointed with the draw.
Yeah, I think that's just the nature of as well, Scale, when they got themselves into what felt like a winning position, and then it's about game management after that. The one thing they didn't want to do was concede a goal chance. And then, of course, the thing they didn't want to do was when Alan Tynan eventually recycles the ball back into a position where he gets into free scoring territory. Yeah. You just don't want to foul him. No. And now, they gave away a free where it could be poked over.
I presume we're going to be talking about referees at some stage, but...
I think we are, Scale, we have to have a very honest conversation about this. Like, this isn't us having a go at James Owens. So last week, I noticed in the comments, it was like, are you guys going to talk about James Owens and the amount of cards that were given out in the Clare Cork game? And there were people who were kind of mad keen for us to go and break down every decision and give out and whatever else. To me, there were bad decisions made here. I think it's fair to say that James Owens didn't have a good game. We'll talk about particularly the penalty in a moment, which I just can't wrap my head around whatsoever. But yeah, you're about to start off the fact that Tipperary were looking for a free at that stage, I think, when Tynan had the ball in his hand. And it looked like a fairly soft one, didn't it?
I thought it was soft enough. Now, even if I was a Waterford supporter or player, I'd be very disappointed with that decision going against us. I thought that when Curran hit over the point to go four ahead, I think it was, you just got the feeling from the crowd, from the players, that this match was done. You know, it was all signs he delivered. So all they had to do, no, I said a pinch of salt, all they had to do was kind of see it out. But like, I have to give great credit now. And again, I'd be tough on players when, you know, when things don't go well for them. But in fairness to Barry Hogan, in numerous instances yesterday, he hit puck outs after Waterford scores and found Tipperary lads in oceans of space. And it was kind of like nearly a catapulted a tip comeback. So if they score, if Waterford got a point or a goal, Hogan immediately found someone in the Tipperary jersey for an answer back. And like, it kind of stemmed, I won't say it stemmed the flow of Waterford, but it kept Tipperary within touching distance. And the game, the way Waterford were getting so many opportunities, the game, you know, it threatened to get out of Tipperary's hands, you could say.
Yeah.
If Waterford's execution was better, you know, especially like even Des, I agree with you, Murph. Desi is a different animal in the corner, but he's shooting
boots. Yeah, really,
they just weren't on yesterday, you know, and that happens for different people. But in fairness to Hogan, he kept the show on the road. And like, we were ultra critical of Tipperary last week, and deservedly so, even their own manager and their people as well. But I have to give great credit to them, because I questioned some of their forwards last week. And in fairness to Mark Keogh, when things were going, you know, awry for Tipperary, he kept kind of trudging forward. He was making all the runs. He made an awful lot happen for them. So some of these Tip players, like, really, really put the shoulder to the wheel. They still have major question marks. Like, they're not, the puzzle is not solved right now. Like, you still have, your goalkeeper is excellent. Your fullback in Ronan Maher was tremendous, I thought, in terms of what he brought to Tipperary. I thought Owen Connolly for good periods was really good, and then Mark Keogh up top was excellent. So there was little snippets of positivity, you could say, that you can go forward. And interesting one, Murph, if you were the state of play now, if you were to assess both teams and say, right, Waterford have now their home games finished, Tipperary have their away games finished, Waterford have Limerick to come, you're saying, Jesus, who do I rather be right now? Do you know what I mean? Like, all is not said and done. I know it was catastrophic for Tipperary last week on the back of the performance, but they're still within a shout here. Like, they have home games to come now. And yes, they have Limerick finished, you could say, but Limerick are above everyone else. We know that. But Waterford now have two extremely hard games placed to go to. They have to go to Cusey Park and they have to go to the Gaelic Grounds. And there's a strong chance to come away with 0 points there. So they could be left on three. So this championship is wide open. But regards to the referee, Will, I may as well just touch on the penalty at the moment now. It's one of those incidents whereby you're watching it in real time and you're barely believing that's happening. You know, and all you can do is try. So if a referee makes a decision like that, you try get a bit of perspective and see, right, what's his thought process right there? And I just can't come up with a reason. You know, I can't come up with a reason why he's on that side versus what difference does it make? I don't really understand. And the timing of it was awful. It really was awful. And I know there was a question that was asked there. If I was the goalkeeper, what had I done? I would have lost my mind. I would have chased him down and said, that's a retake, and you've completely put me off, you know, and put a focus on it. Because what he did was, for me as a keeper, was unforgivable. And in fairness to Bennett too, if you put the two together in terms of a time-lapse, as Bennett's picking the ball, James Owens is running across him. So his eye line is taken too. So it's a disadvantage for both people, you know what I mean? So yes, it went in, so it went well for Waterford, but it should have been a retake in the story. And I think that would be the fair situation. But I can't draw, you know, any kind of realistic thought process for James Owens. I don't know what he was thinking, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And
look, I think he's been under pressure the last few weeks, and I think we also have to understand the state of play for referees nationally at the moment. Like, we're not awash with them. We don't have 100 referees ready to step up and come into a senior Munster championship game. So it's not as if we're coaching referees and there's an actual pathway for people to come from juvenile refereeing all the way up to senior. It's not there. Well, not that I know of anyway, to be honest. So We have what we have, lads.
I mean, that question came in from Kieran McCarthy, who said, one for Skell, what would your initial reaction be if a referee ran straight across your line of sight as an opposing player was getting ready to strike a penalty similar to James Owens running in front of Barry Hogan on Saturday evening? And look, I was talking to Brian Gavin a little bit earlier. He's writing his Irish Examiner column, which I think will be out either late tonight or early tomorrow, where he's looking at the refereeing. And he was saying there's a possibility that there was a pressure built up within James Owens' head going into the game yesterday, which is that there was a lot of talk in the fallout from the Clare Cork game, particularly about the amount of cards that were given. And he was saying maybe that he was conscious about that within his performance, and it can eat away at a referee when they've got the kind of whirl of noise that's going around during the week. And Brian made a similar point to you as well, Skell, where he said a lot of experienced referees have retired over the last 3-4 years. There were kind of multiple provincial finals or multiple All-Ireland finals. A lot of them have gone in a glut, and you get to a point now where the inter-county panel is reasonably thin for referees. And I see a lot of people online who are going, oh, stand James Owens down after the mistakes that he made at the weekend, or you know, look at the way he's refereed in the first two games, they need to get him off the inter-county panel. Like, what I would say to those lads would be, who are you replacing with them exactly?
But Will, pick any sport worldwide, pick any professional sport. Is there any sport in this world where the refereeing is excellent? No.
Refs make mistakes.
When you have a human, right, you're going to have errors, right? It's just how much can you, you know, what level of error are you going to, you know, encounter with some people? But every single sport, soccer, we hear about referees all the time in professional sports, rugby the same way. And look at the backup that they have, whether it be with the team on rugby or, you know, VAR in soccer. Every American sport, officials are classicized weekly, you know. So I understand, let's say, that we're going to have a level of error on behalf of a referee, but you try and isolate it to maybe one match per year, you know, where they've had an error, fair enough, right? But when it becomes a repetitive team, it's a tricky one. But again, in the same breath, here I am talking about both sides of my mouth. I know we don't have a plethora of referees. Like, there's not 10 referees in Kilkenny and 10 referees in Galway ready to take up the mantle here. There's not.
Yeah.
You know, there's two out of Galway, I think. Kilkenny have senior, none, Murphy, is there?
I think we have one. I think Sean Clear is still
Clear, yeah.
Sorry, Sean Clear, excuse me, I stand corrected. Yep. So, like, you know, two big hurling counties and three referees between us.
Oh, look, the other thing as well is, right, when you mentioned probably some of the sports where refereeing and officiating is generally done to a very, very high standard, they have got every advantage with technology, with extra referees, with line officials that are not available to GAA referees right now. Like, we can debate whether it was a square ball for Galan a few weeks ago, or it was a square ball for the tip game at the weekend. If that was in rugby or that was in NFL, that'd be referred, they'd have a quick look, and they'd come back. Instead, you are relying on an umpire a few feet away to actually get that decision right. And while I think umpires and referees should get the vast, vast majority of decisions right, we have this aversion towards bringing in technology, despite the fact that we're perfectly happy for Hawkeye to only be available in a few grounds and only usable, say, when those matches are on. So, like, it doesn't have to go from junior C right up to All-Ireland senior level. Like, you can accept the fact that maybe only at All-Ireland senior championship level certain technologies will be available. But you get to a point now, again, Brian Gavin was saying it earlier, a referee has got about 12 or 13 different things that they have to watch now during a game, which they didn't have to do when he was starting to referee. So it's become more and more difficult for referees at the very highest level. It doesn't excuse mistakes, and we're probably going to talk about some other controversial ones during the day that may well have determined things one way or another. But I would hope, anyway, Murph, none of the three of us are on here to just slate referees or to say kick boys off the panel or whatever else.
No, it's an ongoing discussion that has to be had because, like Skell said there, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. And in this conversation, invariably, I think you end up, and I'll hold my hands up as well here, saying that we all end up talking out of both sides of our mouth. Because, you know, if you look at one game and you pull apart a referee, but then let's say you stand back from that and you go, like, every week, or, you know, you always hear people saying, we have the fastest field sport in the world. Okay, that's the ball, but the players are moving at an enormously fast pace. But if you look at the other games then that we compare to, let's say, rugby, soccer, whatever, they're slower games, but they have far more technology, far more referees involved. So we're putting it down on one person, really. Like, I mean, yeah, we have the linesmen and we have the umpires and things, but the umpires aren't registered referees, to my knowledge. They're normal people. And then you have the linesmen then in inter-county games. They will be referees, but have limited powers as well. So I think for, like, once we're having this conversation, we can only have the conversation to a limited degree, in that until referees are provided more help, and whatever that help may be, let's not get into whether it's technology or whether it's a referee in each half, which I saw another suggestion over the weekend, but whatever that is, we always have to view it through the lens of it's extremely tough to be a referee. And then we can also then pause that and look back and go, but James Owens also made mistakes at the weekend. Let's say as a very compartmentalized game, he made mistakes. He can still have the same conversation. But like, and then the next layer of that is, yeah, we don't have a lot of referees coming through. And even if we did have a good few referees coming through, will we have different results, really? That's the question you need to ask. Like, is it the case that we train new referees? Will those referees still not be faced with the same problems of having to try and, you know, a ball flies 100 yards up the field, you're running up the field, there's two lads pulling and dragging, you give a free one direction when on the Sunday game that evening we watch the replay and we go, oh, the other fella actually hit him with the butt of the hurl. How do you police that, you know? So it's such a tough conversation to have, I think, because you end up sounding hypocritical. You know, I'm sure someone could go back to one of our podcasts 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, whatever, and contradict something I've said here now with something I've said 3 weeks ago. You know, it's such a fine conversation to have, but it's an ongoing conversation. I said it at the start of this. It's ongoing. We constantly keep having to have it because it's not right yet, and we have to try and figure out how we have that conversation. Another thing is, like, you know, hindsight's a great thing. We look back at Brian Gavin, and so many people would say Brian Gavin contributed so well to so many games and he was excellent. But Brian Gavin had a lot of tough decisions during games as well that could have went one way or another against him, do you know? As in terms of, he made a decision at the time and it just so happened that in hindsight people went, great decision. But decisions could have went just as well against him as well, you know? So it's such a tough position.
Do you think, Murph, if you rewind back, if you take social media now and the presence we have at the moment and the scrutiny referees are under, how many cameras have faced them, and you put Brian Gavin's whole career or Barry Kelly into Jay's terms, do you think they'd be renowned as good as... I bet you they'd be picked apart. I bet you they'd make a decision. Now, I know the game was way different back then and it wasn't as physically dominated, if you know what I mean, in terms of body tactics.
Yeah.
You know, like nowadays, now, see, there's an awful lot more running in the game nowadays. That's more running with the ball. So it's way more tackling, way more contact. So I understand the referees have an extremely hard job to do, but the question I was going to ask you is, how high do you think in terms of importance to the GAA regard fixing the referee situation? Because if it was regarded highly, they'd do it. But I don't see any motions from any county board or club. I don't see any kind of rule changes to bring in extra officials. I don't see any, to be honest, I don't see people enticed to come in to be a referee because financially, if you had a financial package for referee and say, look, okay, here, we're going to give you guys 500 euro for a game, I guarantee a referee will pick up the sport. Not they treat it as a sport or even as a profession, but none of that seems to be actioned or even in line to be actioned.
Yeah, I think if you talk to a lot of officials who've dropped out in the last few years, and some were annoyed, as we heard from Fergal Horgan last year, where he wasn't happy with the way the appointments were being made and he felt that the wrong referees were being appointed, and this was an issue that he saw that went beyond that. He also mentioned the fact that he felt like the support levels had dropped off for referees, and like the pressure has to be different. You've just said there about social media. Once upon a time, the old referees' adage used to be, you want your name just to be down as referee in the match reports that come out on a Monday morning. Yeah. Now, while the game is on, there are clips coming out while the game's still being played, and they're there and they're commented on. I don't care how strong your resolve might be, your friend or a family member or someone else is going to see something online, and you're almost guaranteed that you will then go to look at it. Like, I know that there are current and recently retired referees who listen to this podcast. They'll hear us talking about decisions, and probably in a few moments' time, we're going to give out probably about some of the decisions that were made on Saturday. And it's like, I would say you're living constantly in the whirlwind of conversation that's about the decisions that you've made, which is so different to 20 years ago when a newspaper report or what might be mentioned in the Sunday game is all you'd have to worry about.
Yeah. Like, in today's game, why would you become a referee? I know people would have different reasons. It's an involvement in the game. Maybe
I have to love the game.
Yeah, maybe that's it. You know, you want to get access and get into these, you know, these arenas for these big games with these big crowds. Fair enough. But Jesus, like, that's not enough for me. That's not enough for me. And I come here. I'm a huge critic of referees. You know that when they make errors that are glaringly obvious to me. You know, I mean, I'm critical of them. But in the same breath, as I said to you, Mark, I understand like how difficult the job is.
Yeah.
So that we've touted here. I'd say this is our third year podcast. We've said it every year that the referees need more support. Like take lacrosse, for example, as lacrosse are two referees and the pitch is only the size of a rugby pitch. You know what I mean? Mm. So like that game is nowhere near as fast as ours. So I wonder if you got in a second referee, like how hard would it be? Not hard is the answer. In terms of financial package, everyone knows the money's there. So it can be done. It's just, is the willingness there?
Well, you'd need to double the referee panel would be the next thing you'd have to do.
Yeah.
You'd need extra officials. But then, look, I think we should be open to ideas about having a look at this. I think it's silly to sit back and go, no, we've always done this one official in the middle and let's not have a look at this. We look at rule changes all the time. And the flip side to this is, if you're a player and decisions go against you, it could well be the thin margin between getting out of a round robin series and going into the All-Ireland. So I can totally understand why players would be frustrated. And I'm sure the two of you had shouts at officials over the years when you were on the pitch as well. Here's Johnny makes a fair point. Again, I hadn't followed the links because, again, I haven't been looking at becoming a referee. But he made the point on Twitter earlier today. Lads, the GAA are putting ads in match programmes at the moment. The campaign is called Think You Can Do Better, looking out to recruit referees. I've definitely seen them in the programme with the cartoon of the referee and that slogan underneath it. He says, try and follow the links. They're all either outdated or deadlines are over, etc. Why are they still being included in programmes? It's interesting. I wonder, was one ad drawn up and maybe it was put in for a prolonged run within the programmes? I haven't seen them, but again, by all means, comment to us if you've noticed that as well. On the referee side of things then, obviously we talked about just the walking across the line, the penalty is just crazy, and Scale said they would have cleared it out. That should have been a retake, Murph. It's incredibly unfair on the goalkeeper to have that walking across his eye line.
Yeah, I mean, the first I saw of it was, obviously, again, for anyone joining in the podcast, like, I watched it back after the fact last night. So there was a lot of material on Twitter at this stage and a lot of stuff we were being tagged in. But someone put up a photo of where he was standing when the penalty was struck. And I said, ah, no, someone's after Photoshopping that now and they're exaggerating it. It was mind-boggling when it happened. The simplest thing to do there was to retake it. And to be fair, I'd say Barry Hogan didn't know kind of what to do, like, you know, and it can't be on him to argue to retake it. But you should have known yourself, like, should you just put up your hands, blow the whistle and just say, okay, sorry, I got between two minds there between which direction I was going, retake it. As you're known. But it's funny, even when you pan to the crowd, there's people in the crowd looking at each other kind of pointing, going, like, you know, Waterford people and everything saying, like, where was he off to there? So it just should have been retaken. It probably would have been the easiest solution in a situation like that. But look, again, there was other calls then as well that, you know, probably the one to Cathal Barrett, you know, that sparked a big reaction as well. And then was it Mark Keogh, the penalty down the far, or sorry, it wasn't a penalty down the far end, but there was a bit of wrestling.
Why does Cathal Barrett not get that decision? The video is obviously doing the rounds today, but like to me, it seems crazy.
I mean, that wasn't even a free. And just thinking back, that wasn't even a free, wasn't it? Not. It wasn't like, no. I mean, where a lot of people were saying, like, we were only after watching Keane Byrne get sent off for Wexford. Now, Keane Byrne's was even more black and white than that one, but it was at the minimum. And then this is a scrape in the barrel minimum. It was a free out. If not, but I think a lot of people would have said that was a yellow card. I think I'll touch back on something that you said, Will, that I think maybe James Owens had gotten so much hardship last week from his yellows or reds. It's not justifying it. It's not giving an excuse for it. But that one was such a point blank free out for Cathal Barrett that I can't see any reason that there was something in his head that he was trying to let the game flow on. Like, because there was a good block went in, but it was just, you know, the Waterford player collided then with Cathal Barrett. It should have been a free out. But it leads me to believe there was something in his head there to say that I'm trying to let the game bit of flow in it here. But it shouldn't have been to the expense of Tipperary getting a free out in that situation.
Yeah. Another thing, by the way, in the discourse that really annoyed me during the week, coming out of last week with the Cork Clare game, was on another podcast, kind of jokingly, the guys who were on that podcast did a thing where they were showing Shane O'Donnell diving to the ground and trying to give the impression that there was, you know, he was trying to get a player sent off for the second yellow offence, if anyone forgets it from last week. And it's like, lads, this type of stuff needs to be cut out when it comes to chats around games. Like, Shane O'Donnell is hit and he hits the ground.
Yeah.
He's hit at reasonable speed as well before he hits the ground. This idea of questioning people's character, the same as maybe there might be questions about referees' characters over the weekend and stuff. Lads, there's a beyond the pale side to this. Like, I appreciate that we're talking about decisions here, but when I see some of this stuff creeping in, like, this is worse than some of the crap you see around the Premier League.
And do you think some of them platforms do it on purpose?
Of course they do. They know it's going to get clicks. That's why they're putting TikTokers on as opposed to former players or as opposed to putting journalists on. But like, there's just, to me, there should be a sense of good taste and honesty about it rather than we're going to do something which is clearly going to incite Clare fans, of which there are many Clare fans around. Yeah. And then obviously it gets quote tweeted or, you know, if it's on Instagram, it gets shared or whatever else. And that's enough to get likes and to get shares and maybe to get engagement. But like, engagement isn't everything here, lads. Like,
I haven't seen any pundit, analyst, ex-player, journalist go down that road. Do you know what I mean? People who are looking for the attention is the word I have to use.
I would think so. And look, sure, you get people on Instagram or on TikTok or whatever else who will claim that sometimes on this very podcast is like, those lads will say anything to get clicks or whatever. It's like, no. And like when I'm selecting them, I try and be as fair as possible. There obviously are funny moments, which I feel are probably the ones that we should highlight, but they're from a genuine sense of discussion as opposed to let's annoy them or let's do a thing about Leinster rugby fans and, you know, are they going to get lost in Brown Thomas on their way up to Croke Park or whatever else, which is clearly there to just try and antagonize people as opposed to having an honest conversation about it.
That's the only clip off the ball I'm going to clip for this whole podcast.
Probably, yeah. But look, it's one of those things. I think there has to be an honesty about the conversations that we're having. Otherwise, we're all kind of wasting our time here. And I would hope that we would never slip into that. You talk about the hypocrisy. I hope in a few weeks' time we're not doing something like that and someone clips this and goes, look at your man going on about this. But honestly, I don't think we want to go that way. And like Ronan Sheehan raised a very fair point about the head hits, and I think all three of us are agreed that Bonner Mara should have probably been sent off as well, right? Anyone disagreeing that he shouldn't have been sent off?
I think, I'm trying to think back. I watched it back once. And to be fair, probably was a head hit, yeah.
Yeah, it's a head hit. It's at an unusual angle. That's probably the mitigating factor by the comparison to the one in the Wexford game.
Yeah, they're not all going to be like Keane Byrne's one. That's the lesson to take away. Yeah,
and that's a ferocious hit. And in the Keane Byrne one, the helmet comes off and it exaggerates it even more. But like Ronan Sheehan, the down manager, made a fair point. He messaged last night and he said the head high tackle is a big issue. Well, serious issue in the game now. I think it could lead to a tragedy in terms of paralysis or worse even, possibly if not curtailed. We all love manly hits during the game, but hitting a man to the head and chest when he's wide open isn't manly. And I suppose this is the thing, Skell, whereby we want to see these hits, and if they're well timed and they land on the shoulder and someone gets knocked to the ground, people in the terraces in the stand jump up, and it can often be a big energy moment in the game when there's a big hit. But it's a very thin line when lads are moving at pace and when lads are kind of wriggling around, where if you get that wrong and you line someone up and you hit them into the chin or on the side of the head, you can do serious damage.
You can. If you put this into context, like how many, if you go back over the last number of years, like how many, you can probably count on two hands max the amount of clean hits that have gone on, you know, shoulder to shoulder, a lad has been bowled over. You know what I mean? That's how rare it is. Like the onus is on the tackler. The onus is not on the ball carrier. Onus is on the tackler. So with the Bonner one, you know, you can call it mistiming. You can call it nearly semi-accidental in a slip, but it was a bad tackle and it should have been a red card. It's that simple, you know? So the end result was caused, you know, the action was caused by Bonner, you know, and Bonner's like, again, this is not personal. It's a nice fella, everything. Great player. Love him. But just that one tackle, that should have been red card. You know, it wasn't as malicious, not malicious, wrong word to use. It wasn't as obvious as the Keane Byrne one. You know, it didn't stand out as obvious as that one. So maybe it didn't get the same traction or attention. But ultimately, the action was deserved of a red. And in terms of head injuries, like, I do agree. Like it's kind of, it was frightening, like, even for me. Not because I'm a Galway man, but just as a person. To see Don Lachey. You know that action where they put up the two hands?
Yeah.
I've read this before about George North and... I'm afraid to say it now, an NFL player too, the quarterback for the Dolphins, right? They've got heavy concussions whereby their arm was going to react to that. So when I saw that, I go, geez,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It's I don't know what the, I don't know what the medical term is or the correct term is, but that seems to be like a reaction when you get a heavy hit to the head, you know, if you're still conscious that your arm's going to that. Like, that's a frightening scene. That's not good to see whatsoever. And look, he got up, thanks be to God, he got up. But if we go down the road whereby some like paralysis, and it's a real thing as people are, men, players are so strong and so physically conditioned and fast. And if you're moving that weight, that force, that speed, like, Jesus, oh God, no matter what size you are, if your neck is down, your head is down, you're done. Like, do you know what I mean? And so the only way to do it, like, is to keep issuing the red cards. And you'd hope it would catch on, you know?
Yeah.
So if these tackles happen, you have to punish them, regardless of where you're from or who you are. Punish them. And ultimately, if that happens, I think people will begin to be more cognizant of it.
Well, that's it. I think it has to get to a stage where, like, we associate a red card at the moment with someone being dirty during a game, like, you know, having pulled a dirty stroke. Whereas, no, like, if you brought it to the stage where a red card is associated with a high tackle, but, like, if you see how they're issued in rugby, it's a case of, yeah, I know you didn't mean to do it, but you still did it. It was accidental, but it's a red card. And that's how we mitigate against the high tackles. So that, like you were saying, Skehill, that the onus is on the tackler, as it meant to be at the moment. The onus is on the tackler. If you mistime that accidentally, let's say you mistime that and you hit him in the head, you should know, well, you're going to be sent off now because you rolled the dice of being able to hit him fairly. You didn't hit him fairly. So now the mitigating factor. And what happens then 6 months down the line is that the culture changes around it in that people go, I'm going to run in and tackle this fella. can I hit them square on? In a fraction of a second, you're thinking this. Can I hit them square on? No, I can't. So now I have to change my body position, open up my body, let's say, and maybe just hold them up, not hit, try and hit the shoulder. So I think like that, if we change the view on it, where it's a case of, yeah, we give the red cards for this, but it shouldn't be a badge of shame on the player, where it's a case of, look, you accidentally hit a fella in the head. You didn't mean it. We all recognize that. But we have to, as a way of, you know, getting this out of the game, it has to be hanging over players' heads, no pun intended, that.
But it works, Murph, though.
Oh, it does, yeah, completely.
If you take rugby as an example, right, you remember the jump tackle where he used to pick you up?
Exactly, yeah.
But now if you go below horizontal, you're gone. So it's rare you see that happen anymore.
Yeah.
So like the action, let's say players have reacted to the rule. So
yeah.
I just think if it's enforced, like it should be, it kind of, I suppose is it fair to say it sorts itself out, if you know what I mean?
It will, will. Like people won't have as much of an argument afterwards that, you know, should a player get sent off or shouldn't they get sent off? And the other factor as well is whether a player's on the pitch 5 seconds or whether they're on the pitch 50 minutes. Like that shouldn't come into it either. We mentioned it previously, like when you go back to 2015 when we played Yeasgael and Johnny Cohen did a tackle on Colin Fenley. Now, Johnny Cohen's not a dirty player. Like, you know, he mistimed it. But like, if that tackle happened in the 40th minute, I think it happened about the 5th minute. If that happened, Johnny Cohen was probably sent off. But we probably, as a whole in the GA, have this thing of like, someone does something 3 minutes into a game. It's not a straight red card. Blood was up. You know, we're all getting into the game. Whereas we probably should look at it a bit more pragmatic in that, like, Bonnemare came on as Bonnemare does to go and, you know, make an impact on the game, get involved, get stuck in, and just overtime the tackle. That's all it is. It's no slight on his character, nothing like that. Yeah. But we have to kind of get to a stage where we go, well, look, these things could happen 3 seconds into a game. They could happen last puck of the game. We just have to view it through the lens of, if it's dangerous, give a red card, and just so that will now evolve into players being smarter when they're tackling. That's all it is.
Yeah. Mm. The fallout from both managers, and it was kind of an interesting interaction at halftime between them. You got the feeling Liam Cahill and Davy Fitz obviously both really wanted to win this game. They had to settle for a point afterwards. So Davy was talking about the fact that Waterford now on 3 points, which is more than 4 campaigns when they didn't get out of the group. So there's a big upturn in form for them in the group stage. He reckons 3 points might be enough to get out. It might not, because they do have 2 very difficult fixtures to finish off. Liam Cahill addressed his comments from last week as well as the result. And it's interesting because there's been a good few questions which have come in about, are Tipperary getting to a point where these younger players, and we're not talking about young players with Tipperary, we're talking about young players who Liam Cahill would have managed underage with the older stagers that have been around from, say, 2019. And he said, quote, we're at a strange place and wary at the moment, where we've a number of players that are the older cohort in their careers in the twilight years and younger players coming together. It's a tough job to try and get that real balance right, to try and stay competitive, but also to put out a really good future team together for Tipperary. But that's my job. And he said as well, he was very proud of the way they had responded, because there were plenty of questions about Tipperary after the 15-point drubbing that they had taken against Limerick the week before. Ankle Joints on Instagram is particularly harsh. He goes, quote, how do Tipperary fix this abysmal slide into Munster irrelevance since 2021? Are we at the point, Murph, where Tipperary have slipped into irrelevance? Or is this a bit too far?
No, it's a bit too far. Like, I mean, if you look at...
Last year, like...
What's that?
They qualified last year.
Yeah, like, I mean, they're not. I just think, you know, Tipperary people have come through a stage where they have been really competitive. Let's say with this, some of the current crop of players, you know, Bonner Mars and Noel McGraths and these, who, let's say, back in the late 10s and things were, or around 2009, 2010, they were fighting for All Irelands and had gotten used to this. And now, you know, Munster's very competitive. They've drifted a small bit from that while they're trying to get back to the peak of that. And that inconsistency can get quite frustrating for supporters, I think. Like, they have players there, certainly, to come through. But, like, I looked at the match yesterday between Waterford and Tip, and, like, one of the first things I put down for both sides, and, like, I mean, we can pick apart the negatives and all of it. There was great energy from both teams. Like, it seemed that both teams went at the game as if to go, okay, this game can pan out lots of ways and we can do lots of stuff wrong, but we can bring huge energy. Like, every team, every game can bring savage energy. And, like, we'll get to Wexford Galway. There'll be something Galway will look at and say, we had no energy whatsoever. But if you look at Waterford and Tipperary, the first notes I had was that great energy and there was free flow and scoring, but there was huge energy in it. I also had notes to say that I thought both defences actually played really well, even though it was a very high-scoring game, and Tipperary will be disappointed with the goals, particularly, let's say, Bennett's second goal. They'll be very disappointed with that in terms of switching off. But as a whole from open play, I thought both defences were playing really well. And if you put, I think, like, at the end of this, Tipperary could go on to have a really good Munster Championship here. I know, like, again, we said a few weeks ago that we didn't think they were going to qualify, fine margins and all this. But take the Limerick game out of this. They've had a really energetic draw against Waterford in Welsh Park. They now go into home games now, and there's a lot of potential there. You know, there's huge potential. And I always harp back to it. 2022, Cork had lost their first two games, if I'm correct in saying that, went to Waterford, no hope, and they absolutely turned it on. And Waterford had started really well, had won their first two games, and were looking like they were... And the whole thing flipped on its head. After two games, flipped on its head. And that's always the potential with Munster at the moment, because we're looking at the the table at the moment. It's very hard to call what way it's going to go. And really, for whatever team, I suppose, gets over their little hang-ups at the moment, if you're not Limerick, every team at the moment is kind of going, where are we at the moment? Like, you know, including Waterford. Okay, Waterford have one win, they have a draw. But at the same time, they're coming off the back of a league where they're still building that confidence. So each team in Munster now outside of Limerick are going, okay, well, what are we about? Where can we build from here? What can we do? And if I was Tipperary, I'd be looking going, savage energy, lads, huge energy. The likes of Jason Ford, they didn't click for him yesterday. That happens. But you can guarantee the next day, Jason Ford, things might work out for him. I'd nearly point back to say the likes of Rory O'Connor. Rory O'Connor, we were looking at the game against Wexford. First half, not really lighting it up. Second half, it just clicked for him. It's just one of those days where it works out. Jason Ford has one of them the next day. And let's say even Jake Morris, Garrod O'Connor. Suddenly Tipperary don't look too bad. You know, so I wouldn't get too caught up with one or two games to say this is us written off. But I just think Tipperary at the moment are going, well, where's it going to come from? Liam Cahill's comments last week probably didn't help either. And there's just that small bit of feeling there. But as we said, there's a nice bit to go yet in this Munster Championship. And if Tipperary come at this with the same energy the next day, there is huge potential in that Tipperary team nonetheless.
I will openly admit, by the way, I was the one who tweeted or texted into the group and said, geez, Rory O'Connor's radar is off a little bit. I think he hit two wides in pretty quick succession. I think from the moment that message delivered, Rory O'Connor didn't miss a single shot from that point on, and he just yeah. took the game by the scruff of the neck, and he was absolutely amazing.
So. One play, one match. Like, ah, there we go.
He was electric, wasn't he?
But it was like last week, like, I mean, again, it goes with the fantasy hurling. It is this commentator's curse where I was like, had to make a few moves. And I was like, okay, unfortunately, I'm going to maybe, Declan Dalton was in for Cork. I was like, ah, who's going to be under freeze here? I'm going to take out Patrick Horgan. And what is he going to? And I was like,
2-10.
Fuck you, Patrick Horgan. again. So it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, exactly. You said it to Rory O'Connor in the WhatsApp. And next thing, I just saw Rory O'Connor pinging balls everywhere. And I was like, ah, good man, Will.
Yeah, oh no, he went into God mode pretty much the moment after I had actually sent it in. But again, look, it's one of those things. And just before we move off the Waterford Tipperary game, just wanted to touch on this because we've had a few guys who've come in fairly central positions over the last few weeks. Skell, off the back, have been out, say, for long periods of time. Like Tadhg Burke has put in two big performances now in a row, off the back of it out for quite some time. Liam Ryan, I thought, was excellent for Wexford the weekend. Rory O'Connor was out for a while. Now he's kind of flying again. But De Burke particularly, just... I mean, he adds such a kind of assuredness to that Waterford defence the minute he steps back into it.
Well, assuredness is one word, but you're talking about a player, Will, that's at a certain level. Do you know what I mean? Like this is no surprise to anybody. So if you're talking about a top-tier defenders, Tadhg De Burke is in there. There's no two ways about it. And the thing about him is, like, he's very... he's the type of player that you... How do I say it? You follow him. Do you know what I mean? Like, the energy he brings, like, it's emotional energy, physical energy... He's extremely safe in the ball, you know, in the sense that like he's like their talisman is the wrong word I'd use, but it's like he's their leader. He's their leader, to be honest, if you ask me. Super player to get back. Like having someone like him come back who's fresh, and please God, he can stay, you know, for Watford's hopes, stay injury free, because God knows he's had his issues over the last number of years as derailed his seasons. But like, again, I always say if teams are going to be successful, like your big players have to play really well. They have to play to a big level, if you know what I'm saying. So, if you're looking at Waterford and you're putting people in that bracket, you're talking about Bennett, you're talking about De Burke, I would put Sean O'Brien in that country, and then Desi. If those four boys play really, really well, you know what I mean? You're always going to have a chance because the rest will follow. That's the way I look at it. So if you have some flat days, but you have three or four lads that are still playing to a level, you're always going to be in the fight. And Tadhg De Burke is one of those people. He comes across, it's like he's taken over the mantle. If you remember Kevin Moore, you know, the wing back for Waterford midfield, like he was always their kind of leader as well. Before that was... with the Dans and John Milan. So now Tadhg De Burke is in this bracket to bring it forward himself. And even Conor Prunty, even though he got hurt yesterday, he's kind of somewhere in a similar scale that those two boys, they're the rocks of the defence and badly needed for Waterford in form.
Murph, can I ask you about where Ronan Mara should be playing for Tipperary? Again, I thought it was a fairly all-action performance from him. He brought that fight within the game as well. Mm. Where would you play him?
I'll move him.
I'd agree with Skettle. I'd say you have to leave him where he is at the moment. Look, he's hurling savage stuff. I think he did. I think he won an All-Star at 6. Was he 2019?
He was 3.19, wouldn't he?
I'll fact check this.
I think he was.
I have to put you on the spot again, Murph.
You always do that. You love doing that.
Sorry.
What is Ronan Mara allergic to? How do I know?
you keep thinking, I'll check where he was in 2019.
I'd definitely leave him at full back at the moment, because it's a thing of, you know, he's grown in a position and people nearly go, oh, geez, move him out to 6. But 6 mightn't click for him as well at the moment, because at the moment, teams are targeting full forward lines. They're dragging out the half back line, and getting in at their own full forward line. So, not to say he would never be lost at centre back, but he's running that ball constantly now, and he's marking very influential players on opposition teams as well. And he's kind of, if you're saying that Tadhg De Burka is you know, a rock there for Watford, and he's a leader at the back, well, so is Ronan Mara, because Ronan Mara still, we're seeing him popping up at midfield, even though he's full back. We're seeing him drift up the field using his IQ, getting up there, and creating score opportunities as well. So at the moment, because he's going well, I'd be saying, well, look, if you were to look at Tipperary and going, well, what's going well at the moment? You know, you're not pointing out things. There's not many things you can point at to say, well, that's working really well at the moment. But Ronan Mara is working really well. And no, there is the option there that O'Mara can pop back in there. He's been able to hurl there, and we've seen that previously, that bit of rotation between them. But I would say at the moment, while Tipperary are building, I'd say, okay, well, what are the things that are going well? Ronan Mara at fullback. Well, let's leave him there. Let's, you know, he's doing a good job there. We don't really have the scope at the moment to go and tinker at things when we have a lot of other things also that we need to work on. So let's leave him there. Let's leave him clicking. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Fact check here, by the way. What year do you reckon he was centre-back in the All-Star game?
I think he was full-back in 2019.
And
I 2019, think he was full-back.
I think he was centre-back.
What year was he centre-back?
I think he was centre-back in 16.
16 is correct. Very impressive.
That's is that a mic drop moment?
It is. I think you get a place on the crappy quiz yet.
You can't just go and create. Like, you could have just checked this before. Just throw it out there and get asked the question then, and then just go, I think it was 19 and 16. Look like a genius.
It's just good general knowledge of the sport.
I don't doubt you, because for anybody, like, obviously people don't see us talking before we go live and start recording. But like, Skettle will go through a ream of what? There was loads of ones there even before this show where it's just like rattling off stuff from like 1950. How many times have Limerick been in the Munster Finals since 1945? Like, why are we into this? Why?
I've often said before, right? And the wife says before, my mind, okay, is full of needless information. You know, like pointless stuff that, like, statistics and you know, these records from 50 years ago. Like, nobody gives a shit. Like, why is it in my head? Like, you know what I mean?
Okay, but we'll let you vent it on us then, so that's okay.
Like, to provide context to the listeners, like, I was doing a ratio of All-Ireland victories over the last 50 years between Kilkenny and Tipperary, and it's 1-3, just for anyone who wants to know that.
Random. I don't know why. I have no idea why, by the way, that came into your mind, but there you go.
Don't know why.
I'm going to let you have your moment. Congratulations on knowing that piece of information, because now we have to get into Wexford and Galway. Because I feel like you've been avoiding this as much as we possibly could. Let's steer it down the water.
We're 48 minutes in, I was like, yes, we're going to just touch him in 10.
Oh, Lord. Right. As I mentioned at the outset, so Wexford haven't beaten Galway in the Championship since 96. Now they have.
Yeah.
They hadn't beaten Galway since Galway had come into the Leinster Championship proper. So it was a long run. Galway have had the better of this fixture. They've had the better of this fixture across the round robin. That all came to a crushing end, despite the fact that Wexford were hurling a man short for quite a bit in the second half. And I think they probably out-hurled Galway during that period as well. But Wexford won 128 to 23 points at Wexford Park. Lee Chin, who's flying at the moment, 11 points. He's given them that consistent free taker, but also is offering so much from play with the way he's catching the ball. Some of his scores from play are excellent as well. Rory O'Connor was the man. 1-6, all from play. Very, very impressive performance from him. And for Galway, it was one of those days where Evan Nyland took over 11 of the points, 10 from frees, was judging them reasonably well. And then they had a lot of scorers, but no one really putting in a huge scoring charge outside of that. I think I dig straight into the comments rather than just going blow by blow during this match, because the comments have been plentiful about Galway and Wexford.
Yeah, throw it at me.
All right. Jack Murray. Why, oh why, are Skell and Murphy so quiet on Henry's failure in Galway? Jack's a Galway fan, by the way. They've been very poor this season. It's like Dad's army, the way they depend on the 2017 players, and it's not good enough. Time to call it out, lads. Henry's getting an easy ride.
That's why, sorry, just to go back for a moment, that's why I started looking at the statistics between Tipperary and Kilkenny, because I started doing it in my own county first. So, like, you can't go pointing other people's houses unless you look at your own house, actually, in reality. So, what I was doing, actually, I think was I was calculating, just to provide context to the whole situation, many Ireland finals Galway have contested in memory. So, I have 13 finals in 45 years, right? So, as you can see, the finals are, for Galway people, they're very hard to get to. Like, we got, in the 10s, we got to 4. In the 2000s, we got to 2. In the 90s, we got to 2. You know, so getting to Ireland finals has been difficult for every manager that has stood in the post. And so if you're looking at Jack's question, like, I know Jack personally, so like I know exactly where he's come from. He's a Galway fan at heart, you know. I don't think Henry's reign has been a disaster. I think it's been Anthony Boot. I think he's taken over a panel that's in kind of, I hate using the word transition, but we're in a bit of a, where we're trying to bring in new players, keep the older guard, if you want to call them that, keep a competitive balance, you know, and then try blood people, which is a very, very hard balance to strike. Even Liam Cahill was mentioning that himself. So we've got to 2 semi-finals beaten by who I would say probably the best team of all time, you know, and we've beaten against 2 Leinster finals. Should have definitely won one of them in my book, lost both of them, and in that said team went to contest the finals, the Ireland finals. So if you look at that...
Is the one that should have won the Killian Buckley goal last year?
In my opinion, yes, yeah. The year previous, we were soundly beaten. There was no problem there. I can take a defeat like any man. But the one last year was a very tough pill to swallow because of the circumstances in which we lost it. I think even more for Zilkini Man, you'll say that was a lucky enough one. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, so,
but still, you make your own luck, let's say. You make your own luck. So Kilkenny made that. And the opportunity was there for us, you know, for people on the field to deal with that. And we just didn't do it. That's not a sign of Henry, you know. And like, it's a difficult position for a man to take over a team out of county. We spoke before that the most, in recent memory, Michael Bond is the only man I can think of who in Ireland, you know, for a, that's 26 years ago. Like, you know, not to rub that into you, Will, or anything, but that's 26 years ago.
Thanks, Gail.
So it's not an easy job to do. So if I'm just assessing Henry's job holistically, I think it's been fair. Like, and I think it's been in coincidence with the way the team has. You know, if you look at even yesterday's team, there's 9 or 10 lads that finished, like, who were on the 2017 squad panel. So there's, and you can classify that as one or two ways. One, it's experience, or two, it's age. You know what I mean? I think it was in the middle of both. You know, so like, I don't think all these lads have to go, because what happens is there's an initial knee-jerk reaction saying it's the worst performance of all time and ever let us to go. That's just an overreaction in my book. I think we have to kind of stay logical here. Wexford, for me, were fantastic. That's the end of it. They were fantastic and they deserved every bit of their victory. And we weren't just beaten, lads. We were hammered. that's it. And this was not a close contest by any means. The first half for elements, right? But as soon as the second half started, that was it. It was case closed. And we just couldn't deal with Wexford. And the one thing is, it's a great conundrum, and we've all been part of it. And if you've been a Galway hurler, you've had them days before, some more than others, you could say, where you've just been so flat, where preparation has been excellent. You know you've got the clientele. You know you've got the team and the skills to do it. You know you've got the setup and the plan. Everything is, you've it all done, and then it just dissipates within seconds. You know what I mean? And it's very hard to explain. I can never explain it. There has been no energy. You can say 3 games in 13 days, which I understand. Heading down to Wexford, we started off with 2 home games, you know. So it's not as if we had an ocean of travel to do. Wexford went to Antrim last week, you know. So I can't find the specific reason why we were so flat. It's happened. I can think of Dublin in 2011, Dublin 2013, you know, Leinster semi final. I can think of Tipperary 2014. I can name different results. Waterford 2021, that was abysmal entirely, you know. So, but it's very hard to explain. So there's no one reason per se. There's a whole host of reasons, and the responsibility is shared. So pointing the finger at Henry management team, that's not accurate. It's everybody, you know. And I'm talking about friends of mine who are on this team. Let's say I'm pointing the finger at everyone. Do you know what I mean? And even us as a county, like I was just saying to you off air as well. We won 4 Irelands in a row, lads, 2017, 18, 19, 20 at the minor grade. And as far as I'm aware, only 2 of those players have graduated onto the senior team yesterday.
Yeah, I did wonder about that, because I mean, you see some of the lads coming on, and again, it was reaching for older players. And I know Bernie here in the comments has pointed out like 7 or 8 lads from 2017 still around the panel. It's now time to step away from them and build for the future. Bernie says, only real ones I keep with the Mannions, Monaghan and Conor Whelan could be a painful number of years potentially for Galway. But you raise an interesting point. I was in Croke Park watching that run of minor teams that were coming through, and I remember Brian Hanley saying at the time that there's no guarantee that these lads are naturally going to go on to be senior hurlers for Galway. But if there was a production line coming through that were at the very best when they were 17, 18 years of age, why have so many of them not made an impression at senior level for Galway?
And that's a great question, Will. And I'm not sure if we ever got to the bottom of it in Galway, have we ever answered it well enough to put action into place to fix it. Because they say, obviously, you'll have minors who are just standout stars. You know, you like if you go back to Murph time, Richie Hogan was a standout star, and you could say, that's a guy that's going to senior. He's not the guy I'm looking at. You know what I mean? I'm looking at everybody else who's a really good player that could have graduated onto senior and just doesn't. And I'd categorize a third of them that just don't want to. They just don't have the... And like, it's hard to explain this, but there's a certain willingness, right, where you have to have the will to do all the work. Like, Murph, you don't talk about it. It's a lifestyle. Do you know what I mean? It's not a hobby. It's a lifestyle. So your whole life is centered around it. And I think 30 to 50% of them just don't want to do it. And that's fine. That's a personal choice. But where we're going wrong in Galway, I just don't know. We're not graduating through. I often look at Limerick and say, right, if Gareth Hegarty was in Galway, you know, at his age profile, would he have made it through to the senior team? And the simple answer is, I don't know. Like, would he have been cast aside because he wasn't immediately good? And then we just don't put time into him. You know what I mean? I can't answer the question, to be honest. What we're trying to build right now, we're trying to build, let's say, the minors 20s, that we collectively keep all these players together. And if the panels are 60 people, just mean between A's and B's, you could say, keep them to try and get the ratio up. And like, will that work? We don't know. We won't know for a few years to see, can we get lads to graduate to the level? But that's a question I've been asked numerous times on public forums. And I never really have the right answer. And even the solution, which is a more important thing, I'm not sure. It's hard for me to not look at Kenny Murph, because I asked you about Adrian's younger brother. Is it Jake Murph, is it?
Yeah.
Is it Jake? Yeah, so like, where, like I was saying to you, where are these lads coming from? Like would Jordan Malloy get on? And this, I mean this with great respect. If you look at Kenny's team, okay, and you look at Paddy Deegan, and he just looked like an orthodox hurler. Do you know what I mean? In terms of the stylishness you see of other players. Would he have made a Galway team? I can tell you he probably wouldn't. Do you know what I mean? Because he'd have been, look, oh no, that lad hasn't got the skills that, you know, and maybe there's a level of fucking ignorance and arrogance too about us. Maybe there is. So when you look at 13 finals in 45 years. So maybe there's a bigger conversation to have across the board here, but how we fix it, I don't have the answer. I love my date, but...
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Nessa, who's a regular commentator with us on Twitter as well, saying that was a dismal performance from Galway, asking Skell, why are we not bringing in a lot more of the young players onto the senior panel? Which, again, I suppose, again, this is reflective of an awful lot of comments that we got in. John Forbes, please ask the lads, how's Henry's future looking after today? Also, the bringing back of Johnny Glynn, has a negative impact in the Galway panel due to him being out of intercounty hurling for so long? Suddenly he's shown up and he's getting game time. Again, you can take this one, Skell, because there's kind of two parts of this, which is one, does it say a lot that there's a reliance now on the last couple of games, and particularly, I thought, in the Wexford game at the weekend, where it was like, put Johnny Glynn close to the square, and next thing they started kind of shooting ball in on top of him, rather than trying to work positions, I thought, in the second half. And like, if you are a Galway panel member, and say, we're talking about how that forward line is competitive right now, would you be pissed off seeing Johnny Glynn coming on in front of you, as when you've been there for the whole year?
Would I be pissed off? No, my attitude when I was playing was always to be reflective. Look in the mirror first. And if you look in the mirror first and you're very, very happy in your shoes that you've done everything you can, you know, then like, what more can you do? Like, if you list out things that are going wrong, right? And if you pick out the ones that you can't control, you know what I mean? What's the point worrying about them? So if I'm another player, I can't control what Johnny Glynn does. You know what I mean? I can't control what Henry does. Just get myself in order. That's the first thing. So I'd be always looking internally first. In terms of bringing on Johnny, like, I agree with bringing back Johnny. He's a great person, huge energy, you know, around the place. And he's really good in the group, and he's effective. Now, when he comes on, I do not agree with dumping every ball down top of him. I think, for me, when Johnny comes on, it's the affordance of opportunity. Now we have an option. We have an option to go that sporadically, every so often, but not every ball. You know what I mean? Now it just became repetitive, and it became easy for Wexford to defend. I think if he goes there, right, it keeps Wexford full back line deep, and you can create options in out the field, especially when you've got a numerical advantage, lads. Yeah. Like, we could have shoved up an extra back into a forward there and made it work. But again, it's easier for me to say that in this instance. Like, but that's what the most disappointing part of it is, that you know, if we've often said, if you go to the game, right, and you play to your potential and you get bit, hands up, we'll move on, right? But we don't show up for the fight. You know what I mean? If you're not in the fight, that's, I've always pointed to Kilkenny, them devils are always in the fight, no matter what happens, you know? And I can't understand why we weren't up for the fight. Was it energy? Was it? It's not, definitely not fitness or condition. There's no way. Them lads are machines. I'm not complaining about the bus journey, because Kilkenny did it the opposite week, coming up from Kilkenny to us. You know, they came for the fight. So I just don't know. We're void of energy. And sometimes when games go against you, you need to flip an energy. Now, energy, you're not talking about physical energy. Winning a big free, getting a big score, making a big block or a tackle, that shifts energy. That didn't happen for us at all yesterday. You know, Wexford had that over and over and over again. And they ran through us at midfield and down the sixth channel. So they're probably technical flaws we can look at. But the bigger question is...
You were saying during the game, Skell, I know we had a couple of comments on Instagram saying to go, we need to look at the spine of their team and maybe even look at midfield. You mentioned a couple of times when we were watching the game yesterday, you were like, we, as in Galway, are getting eaten alive around the middle of the field.
Yeah, and that's because I was looking at the puck outs in both directions. So if we hit a Galway puck out and let's say the Wexford halfback and knocked it down, Wexford were there first, Horn was there first, you know what I mean? He was brilliant, by the way. Mm. If a Wexford puck out was hit long and the Galway halfback knocked it down, Wexford were there first. So like, if ever I'm coaching, I'm always telling lads, if the ball is dropping on a halfback line, you must be first on arrival. You've got to be. Otherwise, you're betting today's game, because what happens is it's moved and the ball is heading your direction very, very fast, you know? Whereas if you're not first on arrival, you're always going back to your own goal. It's as simple as that. And that's really, like, I always say to our players too, that work rate is not this. It's not a tactic or a skill. It's just a pure decision. That's all it is like. It's, I'm going to go hard at this now and go as hard as I can. And if you want to be there, you'll get there. That's the size of it, you know? So that was the toughest pill to swallow for me yesterday, was that we were getting just cleaned out, really cleaned out in every single break that happened around the middle. And that was a huge platform for Wexford to go through us. You know, hurling's an invasive sport. We know that. You can either go around them, through them, or over them, right? And Wexford did all three yesterday. You know what I mean? They did all three. They went over St. Rory Connor. They went through us with their midfield. And they went around us with runners. So it's very, very hard to defend, you know, one when it's going against you. To defend all three. Oh, Jesus. You know, it's extremely difficult, yeah. I'm in darkness here as well. I better turn on the lights.
Yeah, you go out the light. I'll ask Murph, because Murph, you can defend yourself here, because you've got people making this claim. It's like, it's Henry Shefflin. He's not going to have a go at Henry Shefflin because he's Kilkenny's possibly best ever hurler. This guy probably grew up idolising him. Have you been too soft on Henry Shefflin?
I don't think I've been put in a position that I had to be hard on Henry or easy on Henry.
I remember the only time that you really got kind of caught up in this was when we talked about the handshake. Oh, no, don't worry. This is about Murph. You're safe for a few minutes, Kelly. You're fine. was the handshake, where basically you had to say, look, I think either Brian was wrong or Henry was wrong, and you felt that Brian didn't carry himself particularly well in the way that you treated Henry with that handshake.
Yeah. That was fair. Yeah.
Yeah. No. But you've had to make that call before. Yeah. Like, you haven't been sitting back watching this Galway team during the year and going, do you know what? I won't go too hard on him because Henry's in charge.
No, I haven't. I haven't been looking at that at all. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, I was in a team, let's say, we talk about my relationship with Henry. Mm. I grew up idolising Henry. I then got into a team with him. The only reason the two of us were in a team together was because the two of us, Skell was talking about minors not maybe coming through from Galway and the reasons behind it. The reason me and Henry were in teams together was because we had a shared value of, we were willing to go those extra yards and we were competitors and we wanted to be where we wanted to be. But after that, like, the reason you get to that stage as a competitor is because you're willing to take stuff on the chin. You're able to go, you can take criticism and you can take fair criticism and say you weren't good enough. Like, Henry will be disappointed at the moment. He'll be saying, probably scratching his head or whatever, and he'll be saying, well, what is happening with this team? Is it me? Is it them? Not forget here, like, you know, we have Eamon Ryan here as well, like, you know, an unbelievably qualified manager himself, like, you know. Oh, sorry, Eamon O'Shea. Oh, I said Eamon Ryan. Eamon O'Shea.
Wait a minute. Oh,
sorry. Eamon O'Shea. Apologies. I'm jumping around there with names. But Eamon O'Shea, I mean, an extremely qualified manager as well. Like, for me, I'm looking at the sideline going, the IQ is on the sideline. I'm looking at my notes here. As you were talking, Skell, you were covering a lot of points. And I was just writing down, for me, looking at the game yesterday, I was saying there was two sets of, not saying sports psychology, but there was two mindsets going on here yesterday that I was looking at Wexford and I was looking at Galway going, Wexford 1 week ago were a one-man band, as people were saying, were Lee Chin, were nobody else. Nobody else. And that's what people were saying. And I was looking at going, well, no, Lee Chin is in incredible form at the moment. But there's other great players in that Wexford team that if they hurl well, they're capable of doing great things. 1 week later, they have a great game. Nobody's talking about that anymore. They're talking about Rory O'Connor. Isn't he unbelievable? Liam Ryan is back. It all changes. And when I hear people say, get rid of the 2017 players for Galway, I'm going, what are you talking about? After one game, you weren't saying that a week ago. You weren't saying that 2 weeks ago, a month ago. You're saying it after one game. For me, this simply came down to, if I was a Galway player, I'd be going, why, when we're going into a game and we're expected to win, were we, like, one of my first notes here was Galway second to every ball. And that was just apparent. Where yeah. Wexford, and here's the other psychology, Wexford, when their backs are against the wall, that's when they perform. But when Wexford are expected to win, they don't. Like, I was making notes there. I was going back. I was like, this seems to be a reoccurring theme with Wexford. So 14th of May, 22, Westmead. They draw with Westmead. That was in Westmeath.
It was in Mullingar, yeah.
Yeah, in Mullingar. They draw with them, right? We go forward then. We go 21st of May, 23. They play Westmeath, and they were up by 17 points during that game. Mm-hmm. And they lost. Wexford lost. Following week, they go out and they beat Kilkenny. They lose to Antrim last week by 2 points. When they're up by seven, lose by 2 points. Everyone gets in their back. They go out and obliterate Galway. And for me,
in 22, by the way, did they beat Kilkenny the next game that year as well? I think they did.
I think they did, actually. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I think they did. Yeah. In Kilkenny, I think, as well.
Yeah.
I think you're right. They did. They bet them by 4 points.
It would have been, because the fixtures are reversed year after year. So it would have had to be.
They bet them the following week. So there's three results. Like, a week turnaround where Wexford, when their back is to the wall, their emotional hurlers, they play unreal. And you look at Galway then, and Galway's case is that they were going down. They could have, they nearly wanted just for the Wexford game to happen and just beat them. Didn't work out that way. Wexford were coming with something different. And that's where Galway's problem is. Galway seemed to come into the game. And I would say that's more of a player problem. And lads can say, oh, I'm defending Henry. But like, lads, if you're talking about Henry, you're talking about Eamon O'Shea as well. You're talking about a lot of qualified people on the line. I've been in the position where we went out as a team and you came to the throw-in with the wrong attitude. And you can't reverse that then. It's impossible to reverse it. Right. And you're talking with Johnny Glynn as well, Skell. I would disagree with throwing on Johnny Glynn in those situations, because long balls when you're losing is indicating panic. It's almost saying that you're panicking, you're striking ball. And Galway started striking long ball against Wexford. And I was going, they're panicking. They weren't doing this against Kilkenny. They were carrying ball. They were dangerous. They were going up to midfield. Like my notes from last week's game against Kilkenny, in the first half, Galway were carrying really good ball up, isolating the full forward or the full back line for Kilkenny and getting really good ball in, but they panicked. And when you bring on Johnny Glynn and you're striking long balls to him, so what do you want him to do? Like, because Wexford were now sitting back, they knew they were a man down, and again, I think that played into Wexford's psychology. At the 50th minute, they were down a man, and straight away, we all know it, any game, football, hurling, you go out and you lose a man, the team that loses the man nearly ups their work rate straight away, because mm-hmm. they're going, shite, we're down a player here, we have to work harder. And Wexford did that. They sat back really well. We saw Lee Chin picking up balls on his own D. What's Johnny Glynn going to do in that situation? I would say, like, the ideal scenario, if you're bringing on Johnny Glynn, you want to lump ball down. You're up by 5 or 6 points, and you're now trying to stand on the neck of the opposition. But bringing him on when you're losing, any team that starts striking long balls, I would go, no, that's wrong. And the thing as well, where people say, get rid of 2017 players. Kilkenny have players playing that played in 2007 All-Ireland still playing. So, like, get rid of 2017 players, for me, makes no sense. Do you know? And who are you talking about? The two Mannions. Parik Mannion was actually, in the first half anyway, was one of the better players, certainly. He saved a goal opportunity. Dahi Burke, one of the best fullbacks of his generation, no doubt. Garrod McInerney got back and got a great hook.
Garrod Mack is just back. We were talking about that last week. He's only just been back training a few weeks. So,
you know, just back. It was Fintan Burke. I'm not sure. Was he on the 2017 panel? He was. No, he wasn't. No. You know, Conor Whelan you're talking about. Jason Flynn you're talking about. The Coonies. Like, who do you replace them with? And like, the thing is, they had an off day. I think people are looking at this very much of one game. They're looking at it going, this team is poor. And you go, no. Like, you can't look at it at one game. They turned up with the wrong attitude on Saturday. Well, no. And they have to own that. But
there's a great phrase, Murph. Sorry to cut across you. Hungry dogs run fast.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yeah.
And I just when Wexford, it's an issue mentally, psychologically.
Yeah.
When you're put into that position, you have to react that way. It's reactionary. Whereas the other, if you look at Kilkenny is proactionary. It's different. Once they put on the jersey, regardless of capability, it's a non-negotiable. It's a given. It's going to happen. Where they're going to go hard at it, and still they might get bit. Limerick might beat you in the Ireland final. But you're not going to be found wanting in terms of effort replication.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is so hard to, Can you imagine being a Galway supporter coming home yesterday from the long drive? Wexford is not close, believe you me. And like, I know Galway supporters who come from Clifton, which is 2 hours away from me, that drive, that would drive to Wexford, you know. Imagine coming home in the car. Wouldn't you be so disheartened, disappointed is actually is an understatement, but you'd be so disheartened and nearly disgusted. Because the first thing is, and I'm a United supporter as well, first thing all you want is just good, honest effort. You know
that's
what I mean?
It, yeah.
And if you're beaten, feck it, we're betting. You know, but, and it's like,
exactly.
The confidence is knocked out of us, you know, early days, and it's like, right, we've no answers here. Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of, let's get through the game.
Yeah. My thinking watching the scale as a perfect neutral in all this was, you get into a position where there's 20 plus minutes where you're going to hurl with an extra man. You can see that Wexford are going to obviously have to retreat back a little bit. Now, they've been comfortable in recent years. We talked about this maybe has been an issue for them from time to time, that they almost funnel too many lads back. But once the ball has gone in long, because Galway had the win behind them, I think Wexford were happy enough. And like, Murphy, you can talk about this as a defender. If the delivery in becomes quite one-dimensional, you're probably happy enough that that's what they're doing. And I saw when Joseph Cooney was coming in, and himself and Conor Whelan went to have a conversation. It was almost like Galway were trying to fix it on the fly, but they weren't exactly sure how to set things up within the forward line, because now Glynn has gone in closer to goal and they're trying to work out who's going to hurl where. And the reality is that their forward line malfunctioned for that last 20 minutes.
Galway's forward line malfunctioned.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. But like Galway completely, they gave up the ghost, really. Like, I mean, in terms of the full forward line malfunctioning, one point stood out to me that just showed you that the attitudes were completely different. By, you know, the 55th minute, 60th minute, the game was done, because the 63rd minute, have it down there, Conor Foley got a point. He was on the far left sideline and he was free. But Galway had an extra man at the time. And I remember going, how is Conor Foley in 30 yards of space? Conor Foley stood and struck the ball. And I went, that to me was just attitude. And look, that's just something that for Galway players going home, there's probably no worse feeling. Skell said it there, but you know, if there's energy, as a fan going home, if there's energy and whatever, you'll make your peace with it if you lose. And like what I mentioned about Watford and Tip, there was huge energy. And you can make your peace with it. You can kind of hang your coat on it when you say, well, look, geez, we brought great energy. We put our bodies on the line. But Galway just didn't do any of that against Wexford. And what epitomised it for me was that when Wexford were a man down, somehow Conor Foley found himself in about 30 yards of space, stood and struck the ball over the bar. That to me said that the Galway minds had just checked out at that stage. And if I'm looking, if I'm standing on the sideline there going, all right, I'm a manager, what changes do you do here? Well, what changes can you do? What, you know, 1 to 15, whoever you have in the field, their heads are kind of gone at this stage. So I just thought it was a day where they arrived with the wrong attitude. But Galway, what Galway need to do is get this bit between their teeth, similar to Wexford this week, where Wexford, you know, I'm sure coming out of Corrigan Park, enormous drive home, are going, how did we let a 7-point, you know, 7-point lead slip and lose by 2 points? But we saw the reaction from Wexford. And again, let's give Wexford full credit here as well. Wexford, like my first note was Wexford starting aggressive. Now, we got Liam Ryan got the yellow card then. And I was saying, like, he doesn't care. He's not looking at 60 minutes, 70 minutes here. This man is going, I'm hurling for every ball here. And he actually kind of set the tone. And then one of my next notes was Galway second to every ball. Lee's chin's frees were really good. Second half, I think he did hit one or two wide. But in general, in the first half, it kind of set the tone for them. And then my next one was flat performance by Galway so far. So, like, the tone was set very early on in that game. Wexford were absolutely hungry for the ball. They were savage, they were running and everything. And it always seemed that there was Galway fella 2 yards behind them. But at the same time, Galway were popping up, getting scores. But it's like, it's just like they weren't really interested in putting in the hard yards to, you know, turn one score to two scores, three scores, and actually go ahead of Wexford. They just seemed to be happy to play second fiddle, hope that Wexford would die away and then go and win the game. But, you know, that's where I think, going back to your point about the fans, like, you can't make your peace of that when you go home and you say, jeez, did they even hurl? They didn't, you know?
Yeah, the advantage, home advantage as well. Wexford fans were incredibly noisy during the game. And there was a few points when they were running off the scores when Galway were trying to chase back. And it was just that extra bit of energy, I would say, for every Wexford player that was having to work a little bit harder when they were a man down. I did enjoy one or two very recent tweets that we received, including Daniel Lawless. Can you just talk about the Galway football game instead of talking about the Galway hurling at all? Which is certainly a happier weekend for the hurling fans, for the football fans, I should say, rather than the hurling fans in Galway. I want to talk about Dublin and up and on telly now in a moment as well. But just to rattle through a few other comments that came in here. Fodered O'Toole, who's always very entertaining on Twitter, quote, if you're doing your Leaving Cert, there's a question on English Paper 2, which is entitled Wexford Hurling Good or Bad? How do you structure your essay and what's your thesis? I had an old lecturer used to say sometimes questions are better discussed in the Ballsbridge Hotel as opposed to in an exam situation. That's probably one of those, but I call them an enigma, a riddle, all that stuff at the start scale. I can't put my finger on this whatsoever. Martin Furlong's asked a similar question. Why can't Wexford perform like they did against Galway every week? If they did, they'd be serious contenders for Leinster. Is Lee Chin the best hurler in the country at the minute? He's unplayable. On the Wexford thing, I can't work this out. There has to be something psychologically that they drop a few percent when they play against teams that they should be winning against. And yet you put a Kilkenny jersey in front of them or a Galway jersey and Wexford are a different team.
Well, Murph, go back to your the games you had there, right?
Yeah.
When they beat Kilkenny, where did they beat them back that year?
So they beat Kilkenny in 22 and they drew where? With Westmeath in Nolan Park.
Nolan Park?
Yeah, Nolan Park, yeah.
Right, because I was going to actually put heavy emphasis on being at home and the emotion.
Well, they heard well in Nolan Park as well. When they go up to Nolan Park, they're only across the border, like, you know, so...
Yeah,
yeah. They did beat them. Do you remember the year that Davey was in the commentary box where he was suspended, yes, and they beat them, yes, in Wexford Park that year as well?
Yes. Like, psychologically, if you're doing an assessment on their players and their squads, they say, collectively, and you were to rank them in terms of where does that squad strength rank nationally, right? Mm. You wouldn't have them, you know, me personally speaking, right? You wouldn't have them ahead of Clare, Cork, Limerick, Kilkenny, or Galway, in my opinion, right? So they're probably ranking in terms of squad depth. Like, is that fair to say? Am I talking shit there?
Like, let's say teams on paper.
On paper, just what you're looking at saying what they potentially could produce. If you know what I mean.
Mm.
So, like, for them then to go and get beaten by teams who were perceived to be lesser than them, I can't draw a rhyme or reason to that whatsoever. Because the same thing applies. Like, they should on paper be beaten Westmeath. They should be beaten Antrim, lads. They should be beaten Dublin. But they don't. So I can't understand how they don't beat these teams and then they can go beat the teams above them, if you know what I'm saying, in the rankings. So is it psychological? I think an awful lot comes to it. And it is. It's like a switch flicks in your head that, look, there's a big difference between want and need, right? And I think yesterday Galway wanted to win, if you know what I'm saying, and Wexford needed to win. They had to fix what happened the week previous. So big, big, massive difference. And I always say to the tour players, you either want the ball or you need the ball. And Wexford went after the ball yesterday like they absolutely needed it. They needed that ball yesterday. And Galway said, right, if we get it, we get it. If we don't, we don't.
Yeah.
You know, kind of way. Which, again, I have to repeat, I've been part of the performances. I know what it's like, okay? Yeah. And all you want to do is press the reset button and start again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's just so hard to stop the rot. But I just... Sometimes believing what you're doing is more important than what you're doing. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
if that makes sense, right? And like Wexford they had full belief they were going to win yesterday.
Yeah, like whether Wexford were going to be right or wrong, they were committing to it, and that was that's
so they believed in it, and they just went after it.
Than, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and when you tune in emotionally, right, physically follows.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying, if you don't tune in emotionally, physically, it can never follow you, and so that's where the energy, adrenaline comes from, this emotional check-in. So they checked in early days. They checked in on the bus and at the ground, and unfortunately, just Galway didn't. And Galway, as I said, Murph, they performed okay in the first half against the conditions. I was actually content enough, to be honest, going into halftime, being down what we're down. I was disappointed with some of the scores we gave away, yes, but I said, Jesus, we could see this out, you know.
I'm playing with a wind in the second half.
Correct, so I said, we can see this out. And that's maybe that saved into their head a bit too, you know what I mean? But Wexford just reset the emotion and then the physical followed it. So I think, Will, it has to be under a specific set of circumstances that Wexford have to perform to that level. You know, and assuming they need to win. I think if you get them in the group stages, I'd say this is always going to happen to them. It could potentially all happen. When you put them into an Ireland quarterfinal or semi final, then they go, right, we need to win. This is knockout stuff. You know what I mean? Then you might get the performances after. But like, that was their best performance, again, in my opinion, all over since the Kilkenny Leinster final in 2019. You know, for me, that was their best performance. Like, they were very excellent on that day. And this now is kind of the same level of energy, intent, aggression, physicality. I can name them all off. You know what I mean? We could be here for the night.
We could.
Unfortunately.
I only just dawned on me there that I named the leader of the Green Party as a selector on the Galway team. I went, who's Eamon Ryan? Why did I say Eamon Ryan there?
I asked myself, a millisecond, when did he get involved?
Yeah, my first thought when he said it was, maybe this is what's gone wrong for Galway. They've replaced Eamon O'Shea with Eamon Ryan.
They cycled down yesterday. That's why they were so tired. They cycled down Nobles.
They were eating salad on the way down cycling. Dude. Yeah.
Forwards didn't have a clue. He was talking about bus lanes or something. He was like, what's going on here? Left hand on top, by the way, disputes the idea that this is only just a backlash about Galway's performance now. Says, no desire from Galway, no structure, absolutely steep last week against KK, players playing in the wrong positions, huge lack of pace throughout the team. Henry's not improving Galway, and this isn't a reaction from the match, this is a general opinion. The Lee Chin, because I want to talk about lack of coverage of Leinster again this weekend at the moment, but Lee Chin, is he hurling right up there at the very, very top level of what we're seeing at the moment? I'm always mindful of this where we go, David Fitzgerald's playing class at the moment, and maybe it might be Aaron Gillan in a few weeks if he bangs in a few goals. We go, oh, Gillan's class. And then we now go, ooh, Lee Chin is playing brilliantly. But just to Martin Furlong's point there, Chin is hurling out of his skin, even if Rory O'Connor was the best player on the pitch yesterday. Chin for the last few games has been flying, isn't he, Paul?
Oh, he is, yeah. And do you know what? Some players get to a stage in their career where simply getting on possession is a lift to the team. And like, if you look at really important times yesterday, Mark Fanning pucks out a ball, comes down in the left half forward position on top of Lee Chin. Was there 5 minutes ago, you know, around that period, Chin goes up, catches a ball, wins a free, and the whole of Wexford Park was standing on their feet. Like, he'd done lots of great stuff before that, got great scores, got a ball slapped in the face, goes off, blood sub, comes back on, gets a free in the 21 on the sideline, puts it over the bar. Like, he was absolutely brilliant. Like, probably back to the peak of his powers of what we've seen of Lee Chin. Now, not to say he's drifted off in the last few seasons, but he set high standards for himself. But, you know, when you see the likes of that, where he goes up and catches a ball, and I'm particularly picking out that point, that piece of play deliberately, that lifted the whole team. And I think it even calmed all the players around him. That, like, it's almost as if Lee is on form here. He's capable of getting through an enormous amount of work. But we also saw him picking up ball on his own D. I think he popped it off. He got a ball and he went off on a solo run. I think it was turned over, but he was involved back that far. He wasn't just happy to do his business up the far end, up around full forward or up around centre forward. He was getting through a huge amount of work. And for a lad who's had a few niggles as well during the league, picked up a few injuries, like, he's not sparing himself either. Like, he's throwing himself in there. So, yeah, like, I mean, look, absolutely at the moment, we can say at the end of the league, David Fitzgerald was the best player at the time at the end of the league. But other players are going to come in and out of form at that stage as well. Lee Chin is entering himself back in here in terms of being a form player in the country. I wouldn't say he's the form player at the moment because, again, you know, we like to look at this over a course of a few games, but he's absolutely up there and it's brilliant. I think that's going to bring on the players around him, to be honest. Like, you know, there's young players going to want to be playing off his shoulder and you know, and busting the gut there because he's doing it. You know, he sets great examples for players. And I think the Wexford supporters will be really encouraged that he's hurling well.
Yeah, obviously plenty of jokes for people going, oh, the seven Dublin supporters will be very put out, etc., etc. But Dublin played three games in the championship. Well, they will have played three as of next Saturday night. Wexford versus Dublin, Carlow versus Dublin, Dublin versus Antrim. What do they have in common? No TV coverage, no stream. So not in GA Go, not in TV. Particularly the games against Wexford and Antrim could be central to who qualifies from the Leinster Senior Hurling Championship. No coverage whatsoever. We were talking a few weeks ago, couldn't believe the Wexford-Dublin game wasn't on. I remember I listened to Carlo and Dublin on the radio because there was no coverage. And now Dublin versus Antrim, which is a huge game for both teams. So unless the BBC end up picking this up and showing it, but at the moment, when the fixtures came out earlier today, no coverage whatsoever for this game. To me, it seems crazy that they're not being shown. Again, there's a much wider discussion, and there were lots of people who were saying, well, how come RTE aren't showing matches on Saturdays, etc.? The main reason for this is the way the old plan was set out, the Saturday matches are on GAA Go and the Sunday matches are on RTE. This isn't an anti a rugby thing or whatever else. I know this came up a few weeks ago. They're like, oh, well, RTE are choosing to show rugby over this. The Saturday matches have always been on that package, which was Sky and is now GAA Go. The Sunday matches at the moment, and this is what happens when you squeeze the season in together, are the provincial football finals. So RTE are showing the provincial football finals, mm-hmm. and it means that hurling is staying behind the paywall. But in this case, it seems crazy that that game is not offered as a stream to watch it. Like, I think you could make a decision, and there's plenty of time for this to be U-turned during the week.
Yeah.
You got to show that one, because it makes far more sense to show it. Because now that Wexford have won, this Leinster Championship actually looks, I won't say wide open, Skell, but we've to reevaluate a lot of our predictions, because most of us would have had, say, Kilkenny on Galway nearly on maximum points. We were thinking after Wexford lost at Antrim, it was going to be a big ask to qualify. And now you look at this, if Antrim were to pull off a little bit of a surprise against Dublin, next thing we have to reassess everything about the Leinster Championship. It's actually been an amazing championship, but again, so little of it can actually be watched.
Yeah, like I thought, again, if you're assessing the Leinster Championship as a whole and kind of projecting it to the final day, I thought Kilkenny and Galway would have finished on 9 points each, and that we've graduated to the final, but that's not going to be the case now. Kilkenny, obviously, still could, but looking at the Galway situation, again, from that perspective, like, we need to beat Dublin and Antrim to get on to 7 points. So our maximum is 7 points. Right now, Wexford have had three games played, and they've got three as well, same thing. And they have, the thing is, they have Kilkenny to come. So I'm looking over to Tugh Murphy and saying, do us a favour, lads. So if Kilkenny win out and Galway win out, we qualify. You know, Kilkenny will have, you know, theoretically beaten Wexford and theoretically beaten Dublin. So that means then if we beat Dublin, they can't graduate. So this is the permutations that's going through my mind now, where I thought last week, I said, I was pretty sure I was giving us a straight up 99% chance of beating Wexford, say we're going to beat them. Whereas now I'm saying, geez, we need things to go in our favour. And to go back to the situation, the reason I'm saying that is because the Leinster Championship is really exciting now, you know, for the neutral or even for people involved. And I'm looking at even the under 20 games in the Munster Championship in Leinster, where they're being streamed online on YouTube and TG Car, I think is. And they did the school games, they did a heap of different games. It's given great service, brilliant service. And I'm just asking myself, why don't they do that? Like, what? Because again, I seem to throw this at you, Will. Why don't they just put the game on stream? Like, is this a licensing issue? Is it?
Well, they're obviously paying for rights. And I suppose in the case of GAA Go, they're making a decision on what's going to drive subscribers. What I can't understand, and a few people when I tweeted this out earlier today were making a very fair point, which is that if RTÉ and GAA Go decide not to show a game while we're in the streaming era, why can't a county board or potentially a third party step in and then say, we'll stream it?
Have RTÉ and GAA Go the rights to, obviously the shared responsibility here, but the rights to every game, they're offered every game, I presume.
They have the championship rights.
And then they choose which ones they can go for.
Correct.
So does that mean they still have the rights over games that aren't being shown on their platforms?
Yes, but
they do.
But again, I don't see why you couldn't come into a situation whereby, particularly when the GAA Go is half owned by the GAA themselves, that they couldn't turn around and say, look, there's going to be quite a few games that we can't show. It's just a case of it's not going to be possible. We remember Larry McCarthy last year when Cork supporters weren't happy that three of their games, as it works out this year, on GAA Go as opposed to being on terrestrial TV. And he said there would have been no other market. When RTÉ decided they weren't showing those Cork games, GAA Go is better than nothing, effectively. The problem is that in the Leinster Hurling Championship currently, it's often becoming nothing because they're not being shown. I'm just saying, surely at that point, like, Clubber were able to step in and show the Joe McDonagh Cup, because again, that falls outside the remit of the top two championships. I don't see why in the next rights agreement the GAA couldn't turn around and go, okay, let's have a provision whereby if game X, Y and Z isn't being shown, it's not on the platforms to be watched. Why can't another party come in and show them?
I'd say what GAA Go and RTÉ have done is they've looked in their crystal ball and they've assessed. They've made a conscious decision. Okay, by the time the championship comes to that stage, it'll be Kilkenny Galway. I bet you that's reality happened, right? So now,
naturally,
the goalposts have moved a bit. So do you think they'll actually provide a platform?
I don't know. I mean, they could turn around to the BBC, who obviously have rights as well. And this could fit in nicely for the BBC to say, ooh, Antrim are going well. They're off the back of a win against Wexford. Why not show the game against Dublin? There's cameras at these games anyway. So why not show it? So, look, I don't know. Maybe it'll change during the week. But to me, it seems mad that Wexford, Dublin, Antrim, Dublin, which from a mile out looked like they were going to have importance on what would happen in Leinster, weren't down to be at least streamed. And it looks like the only TV games we're likely to see in the Leinster Championship were the game that was on telly last week, which is Salt Hill. Maybe we'll get one in the last round, but I think it's a Saturday finish, so it's probably going to be GAA Go. And the final is going to be on RTÉ2 because it's on the same day as the Joe McDonagh. That's it. So you get two matches. It's like you're basically deciding that the Galway Kilkenny game, which we've given out about for the amount of shadow boxing that's gone on for the last 4 or 5 years when they've met, becomes a TV game and the final. And you miss out in the games where teams are trying to get into third place, or they're trying to, make sure they don't drop down to the Joe McDonagh for next season. Because there's stakes at the bottom in Leinster where there aren't in Munster. And I know I've had a few Carlo fans who got onto us in the last few weeks and they're like, well, talk a bit more about Carlo. I said, look, Carlo haven't been on telly, so we haven't been able to watch them. And they made the fair point that the Sunday game, they are the wrap game pretty much every time, no matter what happens. Last match, it's obviously not getting the full treatment punditry-wise. Yeah. It's run through pretty quickly. Here's a few scores. Game is over. Ah, Carlo are making a great effort, aren't they? Ooh, they were great in that McDonough final last year. And that's kind of slowly but surely they're forgotten about. And potentially they could drop back out of the championship without getting any coverage whatsoever. So I don't know. I just think this might be something for Leinster Council to reassess as well if they want to promote their product. Because people come say complain about the fact that Dublin hurling lags so far behind in football. But if you're a Dublin hurler, you got to be thinking, Owen O'Donnell's playing on TV when he played with the footballers. The footballers are going for All-Ireland Championships and the hurlers are off in the complete shadows and barely getting any attention whatsoever.
So it's true, though.
It's kind of cyclical, isn't it? Like, I mean,
yes, it's the reality of the scenario.
Yeah, like what can you to aspire to? There were other comments that we didn't get a chance to look at because purely we kind of wrapped them in other ways. The Demolator 996, which is a fantastic name on Instagram. Can Wexford survive in Leinster? They got two games. They'd be expected to beat Carlo. And then if they beat Kilkenny, they're in pole position not just to qualify, but they could qualify for the final after getting the win against Galway. So, yeah, questions about Galway structure and so on. We've kind of touched on all that as well. By the way, the engagement on the YouTube particularly has been mad the last 3 weeks, whether that be the live stream on the Mondays or comments afterwards, people liking and so on. It's been great. It's helped to spread the pot around quite a bit. So if you're watching us on there, if you could continue to do that, that'd be magnificent. If you want to leave us a rating or a comment on any of the podcast formats, by all means, that would help us out quite a bit too, whether you're listening on Go Loud or on Apple or on Spotify. Again, it just helps people to see it because the algorithm will push it up when people go searching for hurling, particularly in the podcast realm. I think we've got a decent name in the Hurling Pod when it comes to that as well. So thanks to everyone who's been doing that. The Hurling Pod, of course, is brought to you by Borgosh Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship. We will be back with a bonus pod on Tuesday. We're going through the weekend on this one, where we're going to look ahead to the games coming up next weekend. So the teams in Munster moving into their third round of games, and the Leinster teams who haven't played three just yet will be playing. We'll talk about the McDonagh Cup there, and we'll answer some more of the questions that come in. I particularly want Murph to address his clubmate Richie Hogan talking down the Munster Hurling Championship on Off the Ball last week, which got a bit of a reaction. That's all there if you're an Off the Ball member, offtheball.com/join if you want to listen to us prattle on for another hour or so ahead of your weekend. Paul Murphy, thanks a million for joining us from your undisclosed location somewhere in Tipperary.
Thanks very much, lads.
James Skell, thanks a million as well.
He's in enemy territory, can't give it away.
that's as much as I can give away. And for anyone who was wondering from last week, alright, my lawnmower is still here, which is good news as well. Lads, thanks a million.
Sound.
Hey, folks.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Borgosh Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.